Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, we take a deep dive in part one into all the locations everyone's lived at, all the roommates and all the stops along the way, as well as a riveting interview with Pauly Shore. I went one-on-one with Pauly Shore and tells the whole story of the Comedy Store, and it's really fascinating. And I'm there at the Comedy Store now, so it means a lot more to me to hear all the backstory and all the greats that have been there. It's really interesting stuff, so stay tuned for that. First, I'll tell you about Tommy John. Tommy John, they don't give an F. They give three Fs. It's fit, fabric, and function. Proprietary fabrics that perform like nothing you've ever worn before. No wedgie guaranteed. Comfortable, stay-put waistbands. Luxurious, soft, featherlight, moisture-wicking, breathable fabrics designed to move with you. No bunching or riding up. If you don't love your first pair, they'll refund the money because they have the best pair you'll ever wear. It's free guarantee, but you will love it because it is the best. And you don't want to go online? Well, then shop at over 1,200 retail locations across the country, including Nordstrom stores nationwide. I'm wearing mine right now. What can I say? You won't go back. Once you go with Tommy John, you won't go back to what you're wearing. It's the best. It's Tommy John, right, Dawson?
Hurry to TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off your first order. That's TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/Adam. From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Pauly Shore. With Gina Grad on news and Bald Brian on sound effects. And now, feeling kind of horny. And by that, I mean in the mood to buy his dad another trumpet. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on. A mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for telling a friend. I love that about you, right, Gina Grant?
That's right.
And Bald Brian.
What do you keep to a maximum, bro?
That's the best.
All right, boy. I got 1,000 thoughts all at once. I got some. I came up with some rich man, some weird rich man, poor man.
Oh.
Came up with a weird. And I'll give you guys some rich man poor man. I think my sheet's in here somewhere, Maxipata.
I have one new one.
Again. You really have to, don't think rich and poor. Think middle class does not participate
right.
in this behavior, activity, or whatever. I got it, I think, here, Max Pat. But thank you.
Chris pulled his hamstring.
I know. He ran, ran hard. I had a couple. And one is one I thought I brought up a million years ago, but I haven't brought up in a long time, which is where's an eye patch? It's either the guy with the silk black one yep. who's yeah. wearing the blazer with his initials
Oil
on
Baron.
It,
yeah.
who's sitting at the Casino Royale,
sure.
sitting at the end of the roulette table,
he has a story.
Or it's the guy from the free, you know, he got the Lee press-on nail from the prostitute mm-hmm. who he got in a street fight with, and he's got the weird beige patch
yeah.
with the weird little drool coming out, whatever the pus that's pushing
yeah.
out. He went to the
yeah.
free clinic in Santa Monica, and
yeah.
they patched him up. He has to put the drops yeah. on to get the weird beige patch. Also, there's no greater chasm in terms of accoutrements sort of to your look. You know what I mean? Like the single eye patch guy is the most interesting man in the world.
Yeah.
And the beige eye patch guy is a weirdo,
yeah.
grandpa,
yeah.
something guy.
Yeah.
Right?
100%.
I remember Marge. Now you got to look it up, Maxipata. But I grew up with Grandpa Al Lewis from the Munsters, who was the meanest guy in the world, who punched me. Well, he smacked me. Yeah, open hand, be fair to him. And I was 9. I probably had a comment.
Who whacked you?
His wife, who was, oh boy, was she put upon and miserable, and, you know, she had to live with this guy.
Yeah.
She always seemed to have that beige patch on her. She had some chronic kind of infection going or something.
And
like always had that weird, and just, it's off-putting. Flesh color, everything is kind of off-putting.
Yeah, it's no good.
Flesh color cars are off-putting, but, you know, the eye patch
yeah.
and stuff. But anyway, where's the eye patch?
Were they rich or poor?
They were poor.
Okay.
They were very poor. You thought he'd
made
some
Munster money.
Yeah, they didn't really pay anyone back then.
Not syndicated.
They were lived in a little shack in Van Nuys, they're poor. The other one, here's one that's way out of the box. It's way out of the box.
All right.
But I need you to go with me on this rich man, poor man journey. I'm driving along the 210 freeway this morning, and I look down, and I see a beater Camry that looks like it's about 13 years old, and it's beat up, and it's scuffed up and dinged up and everything. But it has a trailer ball. It has a trailer hitch on the back of it.
All right, for hauling all sorts of things?
Well, the rich man has a Range Rover that he uses to bring his horses, like to the polo whatever. Like there is a boat,
toy
or
hauler.
Something.
Mm-hmm.
There is a rich man hauling kind of thing. And then we're moving from Louisiana and we're going to Indianapolis and we got the U-Haul. It's not a middle class thing, that trailer ball in the suburban neighborhood. They're not really towing boats or horses, and they're not relocating via U-Haul.
More likely, yes, 100% with the Camry with the trailer hitch and whatever's behind it. They live in that Camry, and that trailer, whatever's in that trailer, is all their possessions,
all their earthly belongings. Yeah.
It is trailer ball on a non-truck.
Interesting.
It's basically, you can get yourself like a diesel Audi Q, whatever, that could tow you and your exotic race car to Laguna Seca in comfort and style, or you could be the family of divorce that's forced to move across the country with the U-Haul and live in the sleep in the stupid thing. But it's the trailer ball. Now, look, if you just got a ranch and a truck and you're moving equipment around, that's fine. That's trailer ball on street car.
Right.
That's rich or poor. You're fucking rolling the dice. You're not landing in the middle on that one.
No, I've never seen it.
All right.
I have one for you.
I got to throw one out, too.
Yeah, I don't know that you guys will identify as much, but again, if you're real rich and a man, you might. In-home manicure.
Oh,
either
really?
You're doing your own because you can't afford to go to the salon, or they come to you, by God.
Yeah,
if you're willing to pay.
It's happening on your sofa.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
I observed this one and thought about it as I was driving up to Solvang through the hills, the beautiful hills. Huge palatial estates driving up to the nice little Tony part of the Santa Barbara County. Rich man, poor man, you have your mailboxes all grouped together. You either live in an apartment and you got a whole bunch of mailboxes, or you live up in the hills and the mailman ain't getting up there. He's got to put your mail,
You got to take your golf cart down to get your mail.
Because you've seen those when you drive up the mountain highway and there's a little inlet and you don't dare go up there because you don't know what's up there or how you're going to get out, but you assume it's mansions and you see 12 mailboxes all clustered
grouping
around.
Of mailboxes, very true. And they have them on the trailer homes, the mobile home sites too.
Walk walk to the office, get your mail.
Gary or Kaylin or whoever, I was able to use my phone to film an ice cream truck.
Hi, Gary.
That's about 15 seconds long, but out here in LA, everyone talks about all the homelessness and all the stuff and all everything, but we have the saddest ice cream trucks on the goddamn planet. And they do not seem roadworthy, and I'm not sure in a thing where we have we have to pull 2,000 permits to do anything that if you want to open a daycare center,
there's no licensing. Yeah, there's no licensing for these things.
I don't know, but I have no idea. I don't see any grade hanging in the window.
Never.
Have you ever seen a new ice cream truck?
Not in SoCal.
No, not out here.
Not since I was.
I'm sure they exist in the world.
Oh yeah. No, this
we have to start somewhere.
This does not exist out here. All right, let's see. I got a few more. No trick or treaters. We've had that super long driveway versus shit neighborhood.
Sure.
Lives next door to a rapper, which is always my favorite. This one I always like too because I've lived on both ends of this. The multiple AC zones. My mom's house that she had bulldozed.
Okay, the window units.
The one she had bulldozed. By the time they got to the end of their run at that house, they had 5 window mount AC units in 925 square foot of house.
Chilly.
They had one in
a vortex.
Well, I'm gonna figure it out. There was one in the window of my stepdad's room. There was one in the window of my mom's bedroom. They each had their own room. My dad's room, stepdad's was a den. It wasn't it wasn't a bedroom, but it's still they had their own. There was one in the living room, and then maybe one kind of close to the dining room. I think we're at four now. There was one in the kitchen. That's five. And then eventually they got one in the very back where my old room and
that
the service porch.
That was my next question. Did they ever do the service porch?
We waited for me
once
to leave.
Yeah.
And then they got, I think, six window-mounted units in 1,000 square feet.
It's impressive.
Now, I live in a house that's 7,300 square feet, and there's four zones. Mm-hmm. So it's multi-zone. That's the that's how it works.
Would it not have been... Now, AC units are expensive. Would it not have been smarter just to buy an AC unit, like a whole home one at the beginning? Would
Brian,
it have been
please.
More efficient?
And, well, okay, here... more efficient.
Come on.
All right, so here's the deal. The wall mount or the window mount AC units are always used, and they're always happened upon at a garage sale. So that is a $65 ticket there. Also, the part where when you go to a 100-year-old house that inevitably gets bulldozed, you don't just tap in to the central heat with an air, you know, with another unit. There is no central anything. Mm-hmm. There's no ducting.
Right.
There's nothing in the walls. There's nothing up above. There's no anything to tap into. It's like you got to start from scratch.
And she wouldn't pay for it, or she wouldn't even make the call for a driveway bid. She wasn't going to redo
the
air conditioning.
And you would have had to plunk down $12,000 at once or whatever.
That's
it is.
Point,
like,
man.
No. Kalen's got... Oh, Kalen, what's Kalen got? He always got a rich man, poor man.
Your house is graffitied.
Oh, like Chris Brown?
Yeah.
Like you self-inflicted graffiti?
You
like
hire a graffiti
You hire someone who's great,
wow.
do it, versus just tagged and you're too scared to paint over it because the local gangbanger's going to take you down. Yeah, graffitied house. I like that.
Not bad.
I like drives a car they don't make anymore. Which is, you know...
You're either Jay Leno.
Daihatsu Charade, or you're driving Duesenberg.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Let's see.
And I did drive the Daihatsu Charade in Costa Rica.
Oh, you're right.
Remember?
A new one? They do make it, yeah.
No, I mean, God knows how old this car was.
I like this one a lot. Only feeds his dog people food.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because when you're out on the street, man, what are you going to do?
Scraps.
Scraps are scraps.
Yeah, whatever you can hustle, mm-hmm. right? And then there's the... filet mignon with the rich
shit. Look down on the fancy feast.
Right. Let's see. spends most of the day on a basketball court. That's true. I like that one. Somebody else ties his ties. There's the court appointed whatever.
Your valet.
Yeah, there's your valet, right. All right, let's see. You have the ice cream truck video. It's got to be about the saddest thing. I started filming. Just you got to turn up the sound, by the way. You have to hear what this ice cream truck sounds like.
It's well tuned. Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no.
That's like a Blumhouse movie hard truck.
That is the new world order for ice cream trucks. Weird faint. The paint is all marred and sunblasted, and the thing's a mess. And the guy's 6-year-old Armenian guy smoking.
Oh,
you know?
My God.
It used to be like bow ties and Good Humor Man.
That's the van Buffalo Bill got Catherine Martin into.
That's right.
No,
that's the actual van from 1991.
That's the thing. That's a van. They didn't even bother with an ice cream truck. That is a camper top. It's a van with a camper top.
It's so sad.
And the music is always off key. Like,
yeah, it's like a horror film.
Yep, exactly.
Boy, Kalen really contributing to the show. He knows the truck well.
Yeah, this truck has been around for
rich
pretty
man,
much
fat man. He knows the truck well. How do you know this truck well?
This truck has been around in Studio City and around the Valley since I was a kid.
He walks up and it's like, cheers, Kalen!
Oh, wow. Scary. Yeah, we'll put
Who would
it
let
up.
Their kids get something from that van?
I have no idea. Look,
look
you, could
at
get,
that
you could get typhus from that van.
No.
You could get
tetanus
from that van.
Just by touching it.
It is scary. This is
it's not roadworthy.
Welcome to the childhoods out here, everyone.
Jesus.
All right, let's see. We have all right. I told you guys weeks ago to think about the places that you've lived, because I was thinking about, you know, we talk about homeless a lot and why are you homeless and how do you, at what point do you get to the point where you're sleeping on the sidewalk? Mm-hmm. And, you know, like people have varied opinions, but like a lot of those people have emotional issues or psychological issues. Like, yes, they do. They're 100%. I think 100% of people who lay down on a sidewalk at night have something going on. Just right. Like we're talking Maxipad, I think I hearted, I liked it, the tweet, but surprise, surprise, they're cracking down on dogs going through the airport, and they're like, now only people who have physical or psychiatric issues. Right. And I'm like, I don't want to include psychiatric. I don't think you need it. I don't think there's...
Can a dog help?
It could help.
No, I mean, that's my question. Be like, what can a dog do?
Well, a dog could help. I mean, if you have a PTSD and you're a veteran and too many, you saw your whole platoon taken out with an improvised exploding device or whatever, now you have PTSD. Mm-hmm. And this dog makes you feel better, which is true. The dog would make you feel better. The dog makes everyone feel better. Everyone likes a dog. That's kind of what I'm saying. We need to get you to a place where emotionally you don't have to travel with the dog.
Yeah, that's like the goal, right?
We need enough therapy or enough meds or enough anything where you can. Gina doesn't like flying. You pop a Xanax.
Have
a shot of vermouth and let it all fade away. But let's get to that place. I don't. The Department of Transportation proposes allowing only service dogs trained to help travelers with physical or psychiatric disorders to fly for free. But again, the psychiatric disorder part is going to be the tough part, and we can get official diagnosis.
Yeah,
for
I was going to say if you have a psychiatric disorder that requires a trained service dog, I imagine that puts you in the top or bottom, whatever you want to put, 2% of psychiatric disorders. This isn't afraid to fly. This isn't like gets nervous, you know, or anxiety. Yeah. This is like will have a seizure or something because you know you need a dog that they're this trained.
Also, what do you got? I got to go to Muncie on business. I'm trying to close a deal. We got a whole line of vendors over there. I got a whole PowerPoint. Come on, Pepe, get on my lap. I have a psychiatric disorder. I don't know how much traveling is really necessary. I mean, if you have a real psychiatric disorder, you kind of. Job one.
Cool your heels.
Well, there could be a funeral or a family something, but I mean, are you really doing a lot of traveling with the deep psychiatric disorder?
This is them finally drawing a line in the sand between what's an emotional support animal and what's a service animal, because now we have to.
All right. So we have to. And tying the emotional support animal back to homeless, which is... you blink, you look the other way and you blink and you've got a problem. Somebody said, let the people travel with their dogs as long as they have a note, or let the guy sleep. Let them put a tent up on the sidewalk underneath.
How does it hurt you?
You blink, it's a problem.
Right.
That's what happened at the airport. What happened to airports with dogs is the exact same thing as happened to homeless. If you check the graph and the timeline, there were about zero dogs at the airport 15 years ago at LAX. There was occasional dog, but that dog was like working with the authorities kind of dog. But you didn't see people just traveling willy-nilly. And there's occasional homeless person, but you didn't see just piles of them.
Tent cities.
If you look at the chart, the dogs at the airport, the people on the streets, the same. Whoever was in charge and making the rules went, let them,
what's the harm?
Let the one guy do it, or let the two, it's just a couple of people. You blink your eyes, it's fucking proliferation, right?
Who was the mayor around
then? That's how it works.
Not Bradley.
No, it was Villaraigosa, probably.
Yeah.
But either way, I was driving home from the improv two nights ago. I passed under a overpass in Silver Lake. I counted very quickly, 13 or 14 tents on each side of the street in a 65-foot span, meaning there's 28 homeless families or communities or dwellings in this one overpass in literally 20 yards. They're all there. Yep. They just keep going. But anyway, I started to write down all the places I've lived, and a lot of them would have been candidates for an excuse for when you give the excuse of, we don't have, you know, we have this weird kind of governing now where we're like, the reason we have so many convicts is because we built prisons. Mm-hmm. They literally we built the prison and then we created the convict.
Right.
My feeling is people committed crimes, and then they became convicts. But the prison doesn't make people...
Yeah, wasn't prison overcrowding a problem? Like, you can't have both.
Right, and the reason we have homeless is because we don't have homes. Like, it's a kind of a super simple math that I'm not buying into any more than I'm buying into the school-to-prison pipeline.
It's knee-jerk.
It sounds awesome, but I started... Now, let's not forget that the very beginning of the person leaving the home was my dad to crash at his in-laws' house in their one-bedroom house.
Trendsetter.
One-bedroom. Pioneer.
Vanguard.
Pioneer. Oh, you hear about people doing it, you know, 19, 20, 21. Yeah. How about 42 years of age? How about being so unsuccessful in your early 40s that you go to the parents of the woman you divorced or left and say, I need to surf on your sofa in your den, in grandpa's den?
Takes balls, man.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my dad. He don't mind rattling the can.
Huevos, Jim?
Yeah.
Jim Carolla.
Yeah. Like, there's some dads that aren't scared of hard work, and there's other dads that never back down from a fight, and there's other dads that wouldn't accept charity. Mm-hmm. My dad never walked away from a rattling can.
loves a good handout.
He loves himself a handout.
Remember a handout he didn't like?
I guess his greatest moment would be is if I could somehow find Grandpa's sofa.
Oh.
And then he could sit on it playing his trumpet.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, just really come full circle.
It's his rosebud. Yeah. He just lies on it.
Where's Lotsie's old sofa? So he started off there. I started off on a porch, a service porch. I moved to an attic at some point. Then I moved to a garage. I moved from the garage to the one-bedroom apartment with Donnie, Chris, and Umgad Abu Zamzam, yes.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Before you go any further, when you said the porch, the attic, and the garage, you just listed three places that everyone you know wouldn't dare let their dog sleep in overnight.
Well,
I just wanted to make that clear.
To be fair, the garage had been marginally converted.
Oh, okay.
It still had the hinges and the springs on the doors, but we shut the door and took like Henry's wet cement and waterproofed the bottom of it.
Oh,
so.
Never mind. Yeah. Livable.
So went from there to there to there. When I was living in the one bedroom, I had Chris and Donnie and Umgad. And then later on, I forgot, when Chris's dad, before it was time for him to go to prison, he decided to pay us a visit. Mm-hmm. And he surfed on our sofa for about 3 weeks before he checked himself into prison. So you want to talk about potential for homeless. You've got to go to prison.
Yeah.
And you got nowhere to go. And the only thing on the table is your son.
You got a son and a futon.
With 14 roommates.
As a bunch of roommates in a one bedroom, and you're able to just take your box of belongings.
Wow.
You had a box with cowboy boots and a can of Dinty Moore stew in it and a water bottle that was Clamato flavored. And he just set it down. He's like, I'm going to crash on the sofa for about 3 weeks. And we're like, all right, Rick, go ahead. Like, I didn't really think I had a vote, you know. I was like, Rick, he used to take me dirt bike riding.
That's right.
And now he's going to prison. All right.
Least you can do.
I'll pay him back, you know.
In about 8 to 10 years.
Yeah, just surf on that sofa. He went on the sofa. Then we moved to the miniature house across the street. Again, three roommates, one living in the garage in the back. At some point, that was Chris and John, at some point moved out of that house into a rental house, but it was for sale.
Mm.
So it was like we could live there until it got sold. And
you could squat?
We had to pay rent. We had the
short-term lease.
Very short-term.
Yeah, the realtor was like, this could take 6 months or whatever. So move in, pay me rent.
That sounds pretty good, though, when you're 22 or whatever
it was. Listen, this shit's all over the road. This was a nice little house above Oil Can Harry's.
Oh, my God.
I know what that is.
Good answer.
Sorry, buddy.
Consistent answer. Oil Can Harry's. Well,
for the... 3% of our audience who are living outside the LA area?
Well, I'm saying it was
three and a half.
Above Oil Can Harry's, which it was not a lube and tune joint.
It was.
Well,
not for your car.
Yeah. It was a gay bar. And
oh, no, not
oh,
that.
No, he's my cherry pie.
Still is a gay bar.
Is Oil Can Harry's still there?
Yeah.
Oil Can Harry's, man. I got to tell you. Yeah. Ain't no windows in Oil Can Harry's. Say what you want about the gay bars, but they stand the test of time.
That's
I mean,
right.
Your average candle store, 9 months.
But, oh, yeah, it was bars. It was less than a year.
Sports bars, come and go. You know, gay bars, man, they're here.
Mm-hmm.
Must have been the AZT.
Gina, please.
We got used to it.
You should go to one sometime.
Oil Can.
They know me. I'm Norm.
Oil Can Harry's.
Gina!
On Ventura Boulevard. And if you want to know where it is, if you think about the movie Weird Science, where they were like in the Cadillac convertible, like going up and down.
Give me the keys!
Yeah.
He doesn't even have a license, Lisa!
Yeah, that whole scene, yep. That was like that stretch
Studio
of
City.
Ventura Boulevard. Cool little house up in the hills.
Nice.
Wow.
Which was sweet.
Yeah, you'll take it.
But I think I was there about 3.5 months, and then it got sold out from under me. Had met my stripper girlfriend at that point. Ended up moving from that place to a little zero-bedroom apartment in Hollywood with her for about 6 months. And then eventually, oh, that was her apartment. So I got kicked out of my place, and I ended up moving in into her place.
To her bachelor?
Yeah. Zero-bedroom.
Efficiency,
yeah,
or whatever?
I have had it happen coming and going where somebody got their home destroyed or whatever. They had to, your girlfriend prematurely had to move in, or you had to premature. It never works. It never helps. You need that, you know, 6 months to figure out whether this is a good idea, not 3.5 weeks,
yeah.
Because it didn't work out. But we went from Hollywood there, then we went to the house, then we went to the little place in North Hollywood and lived there. Then she moved out, and I had a series of roommates come in and just stay for a month at a time. Then I moved up to Joyce Lauffer's house, which was... her daughter, Karen, went off to college. She was, like, divorced for a million years and just mom living alone in the time capsule up in Studio City. I moved into Karen's room and just slept on the floor in, the futon. That was about 6 months.
My.
And then I moved from there to a rent control apartment in Santa Monica that the director of the Acme Theater lived in before he moved out and bought his first house. I just kind of slid in behind him. And, moved in. It's also that it's such a weird that feeling. You guys, tell me if you guys can all remember this feeling. The feeling of it's like you're traveling through the train station of life with no ID and no ticket and no papers, but you kind of have to make your way, you know? And this guy had a rent control apartment in Santa Monica, and he was moving out, and he was like, you could just kind of move in, and then at some point, I'm going to introduce you to the owner, and you're going to be like, yeah.
Sounds great.
I live here now, and I'm awesome, you know, and how you doing, pal? Yeah. Have you lost weight? But he can't ask me for running a credit report or any deposits or any form of anything. I have nothing to show you. I have no credit cards to put on file. I don't have anything.
No, we all dreamed of a sweet talking our way into a cool apartment, and it never works.
Yeah, but my whole life was one big no credit card, no deposit, no security, whatever. I wouldn't pass any checks or anything. Moved in, lived there, then went from there to La Crescenta to live with Ralph and Below Deck's Cortland
That's
Cox
right.
over there. Lived in that house.
Cordy.
Finally, Ralph moved out. And, oh, no, the guy sold the house out from under us there, too. Well, you know, these guys, they rent their house out for 2 years, and then they want to sell it, you know. He sold it. Then me and Cortland got an apartment in Toluca Lake, kind of adjacent, and we lived in Toluca Lake. And then I bought my first house, but I still had a roommate because I didn't want to leave Cortland, you know, holding the bag. So he moved in with me to my new house.
Did you get the bends from going to that, from that apartment to that fancy house on the hill?
You know, it was weird. I had a couple thoughts. It was a nice old house. Two things. It wasn't turnkey at all. It was beat to shit. Beat to shit. And I knew it was going to take like a year of rehab before I moved in. So I didn't have the bends. It was like a slow drip of going over there and fixing it up. But I remember seeing that house. I had owed the IRS $5,000. I'd made payments of like $28 for 4 years when I was at the end. I finally had some money. Like, now may I pay you off? They're like, yep. I go, what do I owe you now? They're like, $5,000.
Yep.
So, okay. I paid them off. I started saving my money diligently to get a down payment, which was, I think, $50,000 on a $350,000 house under the Hollywood sign, if you could imagine. But it was beat to shit. And
they were basically just selling the land at that point.
It's just going, oh, you know, oh, I forgot. I got Mike August before Mike Lynch got Mike August.
Hey, Mike, he's talking about you, you fuck ass.
When we were taking a tour of Mike Lynch's house, he was proudly telling us about painting his bedroom, right, and his basement, adding on, and wants to expand the mass. And Mike said, why don't you just tear the whole place down? start fresh. At some point, when my house was sufficiently gutted, mm-hmm, and like taken apart and stripped and like mostly just studs, mm-hmm, everywhere, and it just kept going, it was like a cancer, it just kept finding more and more. Jimmy came over for lunch. Like, he just, like, come by at one, we'll go out, we're on Elin. He just came by and he just walked in and he just, mouth of babes, he just looked around and he went, "Why don't you just tear it all down?" Mm-hmm. Like, well, what are you doing? Like, he really, as a novice, yeah, we, yeah, wanted to know, why are we doing?
Start over.
Finished that house, and from that point on, it was homes that I owned. But I lived in many, many different, mm-hmm, types of places: rented houses, and rented rooms, and small apartments, and decent apartments, and always with roommates, and always with different, mm-hmm, situations. And it's pretty doable. Yeah. I'm here to tell you. You gotta kind of want it. You have to want to not sleep on the sidewalk.
Yes, indeed.
If that is your goal,
then you can manifest
it's
that.
Pretty doable, yeah. But it doesn't have a lot to do with how much money you have or how many apartments are available. It's got much more to do with your willingness to sleep on the sidewalk. So I didn't have places available per se. Right. I didn't have money per se, but
you had determination.
You were unwilling.
Those two departments, I was like a 2.5, but I was 11 and not wanting to sleep, mm-hmm, outside. So it's doable, people. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I just counted from my first home, you know, that's the only place I ever lived, really, to now, I've lived in 14 places.
Damn.
So, you know, it is your willingness not to sleep on the sidewalk.
And eventually, you get kind of good at it. And it doesn't seem as difficult. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm like, oh, it's time to move.
And that doesn't count all the different dwellings in college. I didn't even bother with that.
Oh, yeah, I forgot
about
that.
Put the trailer ball.
20 places.
Put the trailer ball on the Camry. Fire it up.
Right.
Brian, I'm going to let you tally up your number. First, I'm going to hit Butcher Box, 100% grass-fed and finished. Beef, heritage breed pork, that's the good stuff, man. It's marbled. It's got the fat. It's got the flavor. Free range organic chicken and wild sockeye salmon from Bristol Bay, Alaska. Sent right to your home. That's what I had the other night. Olga did it up with a teriyaki glaze. Mm. So damn good. Free shipping anywhere in the U.S., and except for Alaska and Hawaii. What? Wings for life.
I'm listening.
It's back. Just in time for the Super Bowl Sunday. Sign up now. And for a limited time, you get 3 pounds of chicken wings in every box for life, for the life of your subscription. Gina, what about your cordon bleu?
Everybody, I'm getting so many tags on Instagram and stuff from my Instagram, Grain-Free Comfort Food. Everyone's making it, and it's so easy, and everybody's loving it. And I know you guys are going to love what I have cooking up for game day.
Love it. Plus, you can get $20 off your first box at butcherbox.com/Adam. It's super high grade. It's right to your house, and you're never without. Go to butcherbox.com/Adam. Brian, tally.
Well, actually, so I'm kind of a long-term commitment guy. I've only lived in 3 places since
college.
In
your life? In your adult life?
Fun fact number one, I've never lived alone. Never. Wow. from birth till now, never lived alone.
Wow.
Never had my own place.
Mm.
And I don't know, Adam, what your image of me growing up is, or my childhood. It wasn't privileged, to tell you that. The last time I had my own bedroom, age 8, 1987. I went through all of middle school and all of high school with my brother in my room. We shared a room because we had 2 bedrooms. That sucked.
I've never
ass.
Not had my own bedroom.
Roommates. Well, Adam, would you have rather? I know the porch. The service porch is hilarious and blah blah blah. Would you rather have lived on the service porch or in your sister's room?
Well, we have to set
what I wouldn't have done for a service porch.
You have to set an industry standard for what a room would be. Now, the service porch dipped below what you would think of as livable because it didn't have heat or air. It was just constantly the temperature, and it was so small.
It's a semi-enclosed patio.
It was. I would take a Greg Brady, Bobby Brady type situation over that, but not the garage. Once I moved to the garage, that was better than having a living with someone. And in general, I'd rather have a crappy room than a roommate in a nicer room. Yes.
You alluded to something that I wonder if it's an LA thing or if it's out or all over the country. But a big thing in LA is adjacent. That's how they make a shitty area sound nicer.
Right.
Like when I lived in the first 2 years after college, I lived with two roommates in a two bedroom. Do the math.
Right.
And it's going to sound better than it is. That was in Palms, which now is kind of nice, but like 2000 was not so nice.
Santa Monica adjacent.
Santa Monica adjacent. Then I moved, one of the roommates and I, my good friend from college, moved into a place in Culver City adjacent, which was across the street from Culver City. The one side was LA, the other side of the street was Culver City. And I repeated this pattern when I then moved in with Christy. We lived in a kind of shitty mediocre apartment, Beverly Hills adjacent. One side of the street was side was LA, other side was Beverly Hills. I've told this story before, but I'll say it again. I woke up one morning to a half-paved street. The city of Beverly Hills had paved their side of the street.
Wow.
The street was half-paved.
Just to join in, because that is so fantastic, the worst place I've ever lived, and I did live there alone because I had such a traumatic roommate experience. I said, I'll move anywhere, but I don't have any money, but I can't live with another person. I need a break. I moved to Echo Park downtown before it was cute.
Oh, no.
Real bad neighborhood. Mm-hmm. I was on the street. I was on Douglas Street. At the end of my street was the Bob Baker Marionette Theater, just to give you LA guys a reference. And I lived in a little teeny tiny studio when I signed the lease. I was kind of young and real stupid, begged the big Persian landlord that I thought we had some things in common to get me out of this. And he said, I can't. You're on your own. And I sat there and pulled my knees to my chest and cried in an empty studio. Yep. I would wake up every night in the middle of the night to dudes next door, because I think it was also subsidized for some people, not for me, screaming.
You paid full freight.
Full freight. It was like $800 a month. Screaming, let's wake up the white bitch. That was me.
Right.
This is where I had to move and scooch roosters and chickens away from my door so I could get to the gate. There was a box. There was
Jews.
A cat.
I'm sorry. No, it's your tribe.
There's a very pregnant cat that gave birth in front of my door. I had to put her in a box with all these kittens that still had like placenta all over them, drag them into my house, and I fostered them for like a month until I could give them away. I was terrified. I didn't know what I was doing. And I worked at night because I did overnights at KLSX answering the phones for like the colon blow hour on weekends. And I would
John
have to
Jeff.
Ask the dudes. Oh, I would have given anything
for John
and
Jeff.
This was Nelson Salsa.
I miss John and Jeff.
That was when the hand goes up, the mouth goes shut, Jeff. A cop asked me if I needed a ride home, and I put my hood up and I said, please get away from me. I don't want them to see me with you.
Oh.
And
yeah.
Finally, when I would get to my car, there would always be like gang meetings on my Hyundai because it was a short like Tiburon.
Sure.
And I would say, I am so sorry to ask you this, but could you please take your big gulps off my car? I have to get in it and go to work.
Well, and those were pretty desperate times, but now look at you in a different apartment.
No, I love our little house.
We should tell a landlord story sometime.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, I could do 2 hours on Al and Skipper. Jesus Christ.
Write that down, Chris.
Alan Skipper. All right. Also, we need Rich Banks and Mike Lynch to write a song to where the streets are half paved. Because Brian was yelling it like Bono.
That's great. That's great.
I want to run.
All right.
To
I'm going to do a one-on-one with Pauly Shore and really get to the bottom of what makes that man tick. And then we'll come back and do the news after that, after this.
Adam Carolla is unprepared all winter long.
Well, Kim will get Adam to get on stage in free ball. Totally unprepared with no material at all. He's gonna go.
He's gonna go.
He doesn't know.
He doesn't know.
What the hell he's gonna say until you tell him so.
He's gonna go.
He's gonna go.
He doesn't know.
He doesn't know.
Until you give him an idea.
Written out a ball. Get your tickets for the show.
Don't miss Adam Carolla is Unprepared this Friday night in Milwaukee at the Pabst Theater. Get tickets now at adamcarolla.com. Aces in Cleveland, Ohio at Hilarities on February 27th and Indianapolis at Helium on February 28th and 29th. And at Helium in St. Louis on April 10th and 11th. Get prepared for Adam Carolla is Unprepared by getting your tickets now at adamcarolla.com.
All right, Pauly Shore is with us in studio.
Sorry, look homeless.
Yeah, you
do. I know.
But that's
people
all right.
People think I'm on crack or I'm homeless now. It's hilarious.
Well, I'm very interested in talking to you because I was at the Comedy Store last night. I'm going to be there tonight. I've been all over the Comedy Store and the history of that place and the reverence that people have and pulling in and seeing Mitzi's parking only written up on the wall in the back.
What's it like for, because I was talking to your producer, you just started comedy pretty hardcore in the last year though.
Right.
But then how long have you been doing stand-up for?
You know, I first started off doing stand-up because I didn't know what else to do, you know, in the 80s. And I didn't take to it. It wasn't, I didn't have enough confidence. I wasn't ready to do it. You know, you hear those stories like Dave Chappelle started when he was 14. It's like, I was 23 and I was like,
you're no good at this.
I just came back after I got tossed off the radio and started doing it to try to make a living. And then last year I was like, I think I should try doing this like as a real comedian.
Yeah. Do you love it?
It's interesting. I find myself getting in a point where I need it. It's not even like I love it. I need
it. Like, you mean this? Like it's like a drug thing? Like you have to get up?
Well, it's
like doing this, doing your show, similar?
It's like if 3 days go by and I haven't done it, I'm like, what's going on?
I
got to do this.
Yeah.
You're falling behind.
And then because it's the store and it's on Sunset and you live where?
La Cañada.
So that's like a drive.
Yeah.
That's farther than Rogan.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, Rogan drives in from Calabasas.
I know.
So, he really wants the stage. So, you drive in from La Cañada?
La Cañada.
How far is that? Like, on Google, you go Google, you put your thing, your maps in, and it goes 35 minutes.
It is literally 35 minutes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's the drive. No traffic.
All for 10 minutes.
Yeah, 10 or 15, depending on.
Yeah, because Adam said you ran long the other night.
You know,
that was hilarious.
I had
because I saw him. I was at the store where it was two nights ago. I'm there with Chappelle and like Rogan, and we're all sitting there. And Adam E gets there, and we're in the back. And I had got an email from your producer, right? Mm-hmm. And it said, "Hey, can Adam start working out at the store?"
Yeah, that was Mike August, right?
Yeah, he hit me up. So I forwarded it to Adam Egitt, who's in charge of the comedians. And, you know, and he told me to tell you to call in.
Yeah.
So the way you have to do it, everyone has to call in. I call in, everyone calls in, and you do your spot. And then he said you went on, and you went on 32 minutes or something?
No, I went 20.
What did he say? You didn't know.
No, I did. I should have. It was 15 minutes set.
Okay.
I did 22 minutes.
Yeah, that's really bad.
And I felt horrible.
That's terrible.
When he
you
told me about
do,
it.
I don't do fucking 22 minutes. I get off at 16.
I did not know. I wasn't. The light. I was in the room I'd never been in and stuff like that. And I felt horrible.
Yeah.
Because
he said he wanted to send you back to the Laugh Factory. He's like, we're going to send him to Flappers, bro. I'm like, dude, give him another shot, dude. Just tell him the fucking rules. Right? Look at your producers. No, it's true because the Comedy Store is the star.
Oh,
even though like we all have names, like we all go, you got tour dates, I got tour dates, we all have tour dates, but when we come there, the store is the star, so you
no,
play
I,
by the, yeah.
I completely get it.
Yeah.
I mean, I was standing last night, I was thinking about this, I was standing backstage, I was standing with Joe Rogan, I was standing with Whitney Cummings, I was standing with Marc Maron, to name a few, and I was like, oh, these guys are all headliners, and they're all doing 15 minutes for free.
Yeah.
And that means the store is the star.
Yeah, the store has always been the star.
Yeah, so let's talk about that history. And by the way, I should tell you that speaking of touring and going out, Pauly's got dates, Oshkosh, Wisconsin, and Green Bay, Wisconsin, Rockford, Illinois. And that's coming up February 12th, 13th, and 14th. And what you do is you go to paulyshore.com for all the tour dates and all that's going on. So let's talk about, because I didn't live in that world. So I didn't have a reverence for that world and appreciate that world because I just wasn't in it. But I see how much appreciation all the comedians have for the Comedy Store and your mom and your dad who started it and you as well. And feeling that, oh my God, it's like it's an honor. Like you get to be a part of history to say you've performed here or you're on a regular rotation here. And before I was this radio guy, basic cable guy. I wasn't really in that world. So first off, I mean, that place was Ciro's, right? Back in the day?
Yeah, it was Ciro's back in, I think, the 50s and 60s. Ciro's was it was kind of like a Vegas-type nightclub. Mm-hmm. It's where Sinatra was. It's where Sammy Davis was, Bugsy Siegel, you know, fucking, you know, Marilyn Monroe. You know, everyone went there. It was like the club. If you think of Vegas, you think Ciro's. It was that vibe, yeah.
And your dad and mom purchased it.
Yeah, well, my dad actually got a call from a guy named Frank Senes. Mm-hmm. Frank Senes owned the building, and Art LeBeau owned the main room. So before it was just the original room in 1972.
Art LeBeau was the radio guy?
Yes. Yeah, so he owned the big room. So my dad took over the original room. My mom used to take tickets at the front, you know, the ticket counter. There?
Yeah, the original room is up front by the front door. Yeah.
So then after a while, then the store started doing well, and then Art LeBeau decided to sell my mom the big building, which is where Ciro's was.
Mm-hmm.
And then they knocked down a wall, and then they made
it into one unit.
They made it into, well, two different rooms, and the belly room was upstairs.
Right, but it was two separate buildings initially.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
What year was that?
72.
72, yeah. And the Sunset Strip was kind of the Sunset Strip back then. Obviously, it had all the clubs and, you know, Jim Morrison and the bands and had played there in the 60s and early 70s and stuff like that. But they got it, and your dad was a comedian, so his first impulse was, it's got to be a comedy club, or what was the initial thought?
Well, Frank Senes says, Sam, would you like to start a comedy room on Sunset? And because Frank Senes knew my dad was a comedian, so my dad and Rudy DeLuca, who was his partner, his writing partner, they wanted to call it the Sammy Shore Room.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they were, you know, going to call it. And my mom's the one that came up with the name The Comedy Store, like the title of The Comedy Store. So he just needed a place to work out. My dad was the MC.
Mm.
You know what I mean? So it was more like, it wasn't like he wanted to get into the comedy club business, but he wanted a stage to perform at. So this was like, you know, Red Fox was there. It was that kind of era, yeah.
I was having this thought simultaneously. When you pull up there, you're like, oh my God, it's right in the heart of Sunset Strip. It's the most valuable real estate in the world. Someone's got to want to build luxury condos here. And then the next thought is,
don't say that.
And then the next
Leave it alone. Don't fuck with it.
No, this is a historical landmark. Like,
pretty much.
It is a historical landmark.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if it is designated as a historical landmark, but it is.
Mm-hmm.
You think, I mean, you know better than anyone, the names that have passed through that place, and what other place could say that? You know what I mean? Like, there's,
well, it's like kind of like the Chinese theater or like the Capitol Records building. I think those are historical landmarks too.
Well, see, my feeling with like the Chinese theaters, like they were showing movies that Clark Gable was in, but Clark Gable didn't go there and work out,
right?
You know, on a weekly basis,
yeah.
With all the names that you've had through there,
yeah.
At that time.
Yeah. And now we have Adam Carolla. We got to put your name on the wall.
Oh, because my God. You Do you know somebody over there?
Yeah, because you didn't go the normal way. Like, you know, you were supposed to work your way up as a door. Could you be a doorman there for a while?
I shall.
Yeah, yeah. And park cars and stuff and maybe answer some phones. No, the normal way is you develop, you eventually become a paid regular. But you should tell Adam that you want to put your name on the side. That would be cool.
Adam's the booker. And again, I walked into that place and like, I had this conversation with Jeff Ross at...
he says hi, by the way. I was just texting with him.
He's the nicest guy in the world, isn't he?
Yeah, he smokes a lot of weed. Oh, my God, he smokes a lot of weed.
Yeah, I think the people that smoke a lot of weed smoke more weed.
Now.
Because
it's legal, yeah. Yeah, Jeff's the best. Jeff's the best.
I feel, like, honored to be... in any way a part of that group. I have so much pride that they just let me go in there and do some stand up.
What you should do is if you because you're a major star and you're also like, you know, trying to break into comedy, you should, my suggestion is bring your wife and just start hanging out there and just create, you know everyone there.
I do.
Anyway, so just hang out there. And then what you should do is slowly start popping up. Oh, the belly room's got a thing. Hey, you got a spot? And you just kind of start, oh, that's Jim, that's Steve, that's Bill. And you kind of start to get to know people.
Yeah.
So you start to flow. You flow into the environment as opposed to like coming in and I want to go on stage now. You
right.
start feeling it because there's so many rooms and there's so many nights and there's so many different shows.
Yeah, you become part of the scene. Because, yeah. like, I saw Whitney Cummings last night, and I was like, oh, we were in the back of the main room, and I was like, oh, when are you going up? And she's like, I'm not going up in this room. I'm going up in the original room or the belly room or whatever room she was going up in. People just kind of circulate.
Yeah.
There.
They do.
Nice.
I think it's called I forgot what it's called. Sometimes comics will go and do like three rooms at once. Not at the same time, but in the same night.
So that place, which has been going strong since the 70s, early 70s, and I always think of comedy or anything, like I think about the heavyweight division or automotive manufacturing. Remember those years, like mid-70s, late-70s, when all the cars were junk? Like even a Corvette was kind of crap. Like everything was just kind of crappy. Ferraris weren't that good. Porsches, like in 1976, really nothing was any good. Okay. And then there's now. You could get a McLaren Senna or whatever it is, like supercars or whatever. And like the heavyweight division was that way, like a bunch of tomato cans, guys you never heard of. And then there's Ali and Frazier, you know, and then there's some lean years, you know. Where are we with stand up? Because it feels like it's a
massive
renaissance.
Well, it's massive. And it's not, you know, it's like, you know, I think I said it to Rogan the other day because Rogan is now playing like arenas.
Right.
And when I first started, you know, back in the 80s and 90s, there was three or four guys that played arenas. It was Eddie Murphy. It was Andrew Dice Clay. And maybe one other person. And now it's like 20 people.
So that's a way to judge it.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, obviously with social media, back in the day, there was none of that. So we just had radio. And now it's explosion. You know what I mean? It's an explosion. So every comic has these big followings. And you know, and it's, I mean, look at Kevin Hart.
Oh,
it's like
God.
You look at this guy and you're like, what the fuck?
Crazy.
I mean, the guy is so big. You know, he's bigger than anyone ever in history. He's bigger than Eddie Murphy, bigger than Richard Pryor. Maybe not as good as a comic as them, but selling tickets. I mean, the guy's making millions of dollars telling fucking jokes.
I mean,
that's crazy.
I used to make millions of dollars telling stories. Not even really jokes.
Well, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So it's just bigger now than it was back then. It's and I don't want to say the comedians are better now than they were back then because I don't think that's the case. But there's definitely some guys like a Chappelle and a Chris Rock and Bill Burr that are on the top of the game. And obviously Louis was, you know, for a while until that situation happened. I mean, he's still out there doing it. Hopefully, you know. I don't know.
Well, let's talk about you. So the club is, I mean, I was there last night. I could barely get in and out of the parking lot in the back. Cars are pulling in, lines going around the block. I mean, I was telling Mike August, what a business model you have. You have guys who could sell out arenas performing for free and waiting in line
to hop up on stage.
They
perform for free. They get paid.
Well,
everyone gets paid.
I don't mean performing. I don't mean free. Look, I told my son, I said to him, he's 13. I said, look, I'm going to go out and do comedy for free this year. Half the time. The other half I'll get paid. But when I go out and do a gig and get $100 or $200 or $45
that's
or whatever
free,
it is, I just count it as that's not me getting on a plane, going to Chicago and getting paid. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So what I mean is you have the best talent in the world performing for next to nothing at your place, and you just, you know, you couldn't say that if you had a small rock club, you know what I mean? And Bruce Springsteen and U2 wanted to play for free like every single night, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So good on you, by the way.
I think, honestly, it has everything to do with my mom. You know, my mom started it. My mom is still there, even though she's physically not there. Mentally, she's there. There's a respect, you know, me and Rogan talk about her all the time, you know, and he knew her, you know, when he first came out, and he knew how special she was. So she created this place. So as long as we do exactly what is there now and don't fuck with it, I think it'll be fine, because it's the only place that I think that is a place where young comics can develop, and it's got the history. So everyone knows that, you know, Sam Kennison was the doorman there. You know, everyone knows that, you know, Paul Rodriguez, you know, used to work the Westwood Club, or, you know, right. So it's like, it's a college. So it's the only college, to me, it's the Emerald City of comedy. You know, it's where everyone wants to go, and it's where all the stories are. So as long as we keep it that way and don't fuck with it, I don't think it's going to change unless the economy takes a shit or something else changes, and it's also a place like where everyone is equal. You know, there's no, you know, even Chappelle the other night, you know what I mean? He's just respect. You know, he even said something like, "Hey, I'm sorry that I got in an argument with your manager, you know, at the club." And he said that to me. Right. And I'm like, dude, you're fucking Chappelle. Like, it's all good, you know? But so it's my mom, you know? I believe it's my mom, you know?
She ran it. She passed a couple of years, 2 years?
Yeah, it was about 2 years ago.
And she ran it the entire time.
Yeah. Well, she created the the template of what the Comedy Store is. So right. Everyone's kind of just following that template.
You know? She ran it. Your dad passed when?
Last year.
You knew you wanted to do, like, in terms of like stand up. Do you feel like you ever had a choice? Mm. I mean, just being around what you were around, seeing what you saw. You know what I mean?
I mean, I had a choice, but I mean, not to pat myself on the back, but I'm pretty funny. I've always been pretty funny. I was funny when I was a kid, when I was little. I'm the youngest of four,
right?
You know? And I've always been the guy that would come into a room and say something deadpan, and people would just laugh, and it was something that that I've always been. You know, I was like a funny kid, you know, and then from there. You know, obviously, I decided at the beginning of 12th grade, you know, because all the SAT papers were coming out, mm-hmm. you know, everyone was going to college. I'm like, I'm not fucking going to college, so I'm going to start doing stand-up. Mm-hmm. So I started at the beginning of 12th grade, before the movies, before everything, and I started doing stand-up at the beginning of 12th grade, and I just started taking it very serious. I would do my shows, and I would record my act on a little mini tape recorder, and I would listen to it back, and I'd make adjustments, and I took it very serious,
right?
You know, and you know, and then from there, you know, obviously other things happen. So,
how long before? Well, so first off, how did your relationship go with performing at the Comedy Store? And I do remember a million years ago when I was doing an open mic in like the 80s at the Laugh Factory. I think you came in and one up, obviously in front of me, because I was just doing open mics. That could have been more 86.
It was,
or
yeah,
something.
No, it was probably, no, because I started in 86. So it's probably like, that's when like Damon Wayans was there and all the Wayans brothers. And that was that time, right?
Yeah, yeah. Sounds about right.
Yeah. And so what was the question? I'm sorry.
So you are your mom is running the Comedy Store.
Yeah.
You want to get into stand up.
Yes.
There's a kind of a tricky thing where it's like your dad owns the Patriots and you want to play football, but you don't get to be quarterback for the Patriots. Yeah. We need the best player we can have.
You got to hold the jock straps.
Right. Yeah. On the other hand, you going over to the Buffalo Bills is kind of weird. Like you going to the Laugh Factory seems a little counterintuitive when you folks own this place. Mm-hmm. So how did that work?
Well, to this day, I'm not that guy. You know, I'm not that guy where like this is my club and I can go on where I want.
Right.
You know, that I'm still not that guy. Like I said to you at the beginning, the Comedy Store is the star, you know, and it's still the star. So I've always treated it that way.
Well, you know, I think how people treat it? I think that people treat it like a dojo. We're like, I don't care who you are. You take your shoes off, you bow.
Exactly.
Or you enter the mat. Yeah. I don't care if you're Chuck Norris or some kid that just got off the cabbage truck. Like, this is the dojo. These are the rules. And this is what you do.
And you respect
the dojo. Yeah.
And even to this day, I mean, I've been doing a one-man show about my childhood. I've been working it for about 6 months. I worked every club in town except for the store because I just don't want to work the store. You know, I don't want to do it there right now.
You feel like there'd be pressure on you, or you feel like you don't want to step in front of people?
I was with Steve Renazzisi, who's got a one-man show as well. He's a very funny comedian.
Yep.
And he says, I don't want to do it the store either. It's just, you want to wait for it. You know what I mean?
It is a situation I can tell you from new personal experience, which is you walk in to the main room and, you know, Bill Burr's up on stage and then Mark Maron's going after him and then you're going and then the place is sold out and it's Saturday night and you're like, oh, I wanted to experiment with a bunch of shit, but not now.
No, my mom's rule, and I'll tell you this now, just so you know, the main room is more of a polished act,
right?
So if you go into the main room and you do your 12 minutes, make sure it's the strongest stuff,
right?
And then if you go on the OR, and if Adam puts you later, then maybe you can mess with some stuff,
right?
And just goof off a little and try some new stuff. And that's why I was suggesting maybe you hit the belly room if you really want to try to.
The belly room is experiment more stuff.
But it's still hard in there now, too, because that's always sold out.
Well, look, people are, they pay two drink minimum. They want to laugh and they don't necessarily want you to ruminate on stuff that's half baked. So I get it. Like you walk into that place, you see those headliners up on stage. Yeah. The room is rocking and you feel a certain amount of pressure.
Yeah. And it's such a good feeling room. That main room, I don't think there's a better room in town. I mean, that room is like, it's a classic room.
So,
it feels like an old, it almost feels like the Dunes. Feels like an old, you know what I mean, the feeling of it.
No, anyone who's ever played a place that like used to do tax preparation and now they're doing comedy, like you can feel it. It's not set up. It's like the ceiling's a little too low. The stage got a weird shape to it, you know. The shape on that stage.
Yeah.
Just perfect. You just go out. You look to your right.
It's very show business.
It's very show business.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So how do you, at the beginning, so it's a young Pauly Shore, you're not going to college, you're in the 12th grade, you're turning 18, I guess, and you go, I'm going to make a go of it doing stand-up.
Mm.
Where, and do you think, well, I'm just going to go talk to my mom and get some sets at the comedy store, or what do you do? What's the thought?
Well, when I first started, I had other comedians write my jokes.
Mm-hmm.
Like Argus Hamilton wrote my first joke. Argus Hamilton is this...
stage in front of me last night brought me out in the main room.
Yeah. So he's, you know, he used to be a cokehead, alcoholic, you know. He used to go out with my mom. And I was like, fuck, I'll have this guy write my jokes. He's a great joke writer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, back in the day, Argus... You know, and he's still like super funny and he's still very relevant, but even though he's older, his stuff is really good. But he wrote a joke for me. He goes, Pauly, you're from Beverly Hills. You're like a rebel without a condo. You know what I mean? So I'm like, that's a fucking good joke. So I had other comedians. Angel Salazar wrote a joke for me, but I used to end with pop locking. That was my thing. I used to dance. You know, it was like I used to, you know what I mean, do this shit on stage. You know what
do
I mean?
It.
And do Freakazoid and all that shit. So I used to do my jokes and with pop locking. And the first time I performed for my mom, it was 2 years after I started doing stand-up. Because I played the Laugh Factory. I played New York. I played the L.A. Cabaret out in the Valley. I played everywhere but the store. So when I performed in front of her, it was in the OR. It was a Monday night. And all the comics were in the back, and their arms were crossed, and they're like, this guy's going to eat shit. You know what I mean? I can't wait for Pauly to eat shit. But then there's some that are like, oh, I want to support him. So my mom was sitting next to Louis Anderson and Paul Mooney.
Mm-hmm.
And I do my act, and then I end with pop locking, and I asked my mom, how did it go? And she said, stick with the dancing. She said that to me. So it was, you know, it was a lot of tension. Until I became famous on MTV, my mom never really put me on her stage. And even then, she reluctantly put me on stage. You remember when I hit on MTV?
Sure.
Yeah, I was the biggest thing on MTV, and my mom still didn't put me on. That's why when people are like, I got passed as a paid regular now, as opposed to when my mom was there, it's completely different.
Yeah, pass means you got to join the... group of
you get your
regulars.
Letter on your name on the wall. We still don't know if we want to do that for you yet. I got to talk to talent coordinator over there.
C-A-R, because everyone spells it C-O-R. But so I mean that's a big deal. It's a big deal. And you now your mom protecting you at this time? is your mom protecting what she thinks is the reputation of the club? Like, how would it look to have my son go up there? It's going to look like nepotism.
Embarrassing, probably. Kind of embarrassing, you know? But I mean, my mom loved it. It was always weird. It was always weird because she was two people. She was Mitzi Shore and she was my mom.
Right.
So it was like I had to like shift all the time. For her, I don't know. She treated me like everyone else. I mean, when I worked with Sam Kennison at the Dunes Hotel, when Sam Kennison had a 2-week run there, he started the Outlaws of Comedy. I was on that show, and after my performance, she wanted to send me home.
Really?
She wanted to send me home because I was too dirty or this or that. And thank God, like, Sam and his crew kind of helped me orchestrate and fuck with my act to make it better and make it, you know, palatable for the Vegas audience. Mm-hmm. So then she let me stay. So she was always fucking hard. I mean, she was hard on everyone. I mean, Howie Mandel to Gary Shanley to everyone. I mean, you know, all of them. You know, obviously not Richard Pryor because Richard was fucking, you know, he was gold.
Right.
But someone, you know, and also Robin Williams, he didn't, you know, he was fucking Robin Williams.
He
bounced off the fucking stage.
Yeah. You have great reverence for your mom.
Yeah.
And great appreciation for your mom. But it also
not only as a mom, but as what she did.
But it sounds like it could be tough to be her son.
Very tough.
And be a comedian as
Very
well.
Very tough, yeah.
Like your brothers, your sisters, they're not stand-ups.
No.
So you think it was easier for them to have a relationship with your mom, or was it? I don't know.
I think me and my mom got along better than my other siblings with her because we were both in the business. Mm-hmm. And especially once I made it and I was on MTV and I was hot and I was doing my thing and I invited her to the MTV Awards and we were like a team. You know, I can imagine if I never made it and I was like trying to make it, you know, how embarrassing that would have been. But it made me work twice as hard because I knew I was Mitzi's son. I still feel it. You know, even when I walk in there now, I still feel her. And I hear her voice all the time, you know. And I'm just happy, like for me, I'm just happy that I had all my films and all my movies and my specials and all that stuff because people in America just love Pauly Shore. Yeah, that's just the way it is. They don't know who Mitzi Shore is. I love fucking Pauly Shore. He's awesome. You know what I mean? Yeah, I'm very fortunate that they don't look at me like that.
Well, the height of the MTV is in the later 80s, right? What's the height of the MTV?
No, it was the 90s.
Oh, it was into the 90s?
I didn't get on MTV till the early 90s, yeah.
Oh, it was the early 90s, really?
Yeah.
See, now the thing that's funny... Here's the thing that's funny, and it's how human beings work, I guess. I was a star on MTV in like 96 or 97.
Did you? What fucking show did you do?
Loveline was on MTV every single night.
Yeah.
It was a big show on MTV. Now, here's how my brain works. The reason I had you in the 80s and me in the 90s is because Pauly Shore was a star on MTV my whole life.
Mm.
Not for 4.5 years before I got on MTV.
You see what I'm thinking?
Yeah, so I was like, he was always on MTV, and then I got on way after he did. But the reality is if you got on in 91 or something, and I got on in 97 or whatever, it wasn't that far apart.
Yeah, it was around the same time,
Jesus, so much mind-blowing, because I remember being a struggling comedian just sitting home watching Pauly Shore going, God damn.
It was like lightning in a bottle.
I mean, how fast did things change in what period of time?
It was, you know, it went from, you know, no one knew who I was to girls crying when they saw me. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like when I'd go to shows. And my shows back in the day, I never had seats in the audience. It was always like a rock situation.
It was a
band, like the Spin Doctors would open for me, and then I'd come out and do 45 minutes and everyone would be standing, and I would do jokes, and in between my jokes I'd stage dive.
Oh, really?
You know what I mean? Yeah, because I was in my 20s and shit back then. And then I'd bring the band out at the end and we would do songs.
Right.
So in my fucked up mind, I thought I was a fucking rock star.
Well, you know there was, I mean, back then.
But I never knew how to sing and dance, but I just acted like I did. So it was my attitude.
But there was Sam Kennison is that way. You know, Dice was kind of, there was that kind of rock meets comedy vibe going on back then. It doesn't exist at all today, really. I mean, you don't think Bill Burr rock and roll or anything. Or, you
He's
know what
older.
I mean? Like,
Bill's older.
Well, but I mean.
You got Chris D'Elia. Chris D'Elia's kind of got that vibe.
Kind of got the rap, rock.
Yeah. He's kind of like a
But I just mean, you and Kennison were rock and roll and stand-up.
It was dirty. We were dirty. We were having sex with playmates. And it was, you know, it was there was drugs. There was, you know, Playboy Mansion. It was like rock and roll. You know, you hang out with Guns N' Roses. You go, you see Alice in Chains. I remember seeing Alice in Chains at the fucking, at the Hollywood Palladium. I brought him on stage.
How?
You know, remember Alice in Chains?
Sure,
Fuck, dude. I mean, come on. What? You listen to an Alice in Chains album now, and you're like, fuck, that's real music. You
know, I like, totally
I mean, it's
agree.
Like, you know.
But is, or, how did you, you avoided the cocaine, the booze, the pitfalls. I mean, not that you didn't partake, but it didn't claim you.
Yeah.
Is that a fair statement?
Pretty much, yeah.
Is that just genetics? Like, some people just don't have the addiction gene.
I think so.
Like, you can do some coke on a Monday and not do it again for 6 months.
Yeah, that was probably it, yeah. I didn't have that thing in my system where I have to have more.
Right, a guy like Kennison or something probably did.
Yeah.
What was he like in his sort of quiet times, if he had any?
He was a giver. He was very much like Elvis Presley. He, like Christmas, he'd bring tons of presents for everyone. He's all the money he spent, like all the money I fucking make, I save. I still have a lot of money because I'm so fucking frugal. He was the opposite. He would make money and just throw it out to people. He'd buy a girl a car. You know what I mean? So he was that kind of guy. But, you know, I mean, he was, I always thought that thing that was interesting about Sam is because he was unattractive. I mean, if you think about it, he was short. He had a comb over. He was chubby. You know, he wasn't attractive guy. But when he was on stage, he was the sexiest person I'd ever seen in my life. There was something about him.
Right.
And you would just see him walk the stage. And you're like, this guy's fucking sexy.
Right.
You know what I mean? Not that I want to fuck him, but I'm just saying he was like fucking cool. Yeah.
It made me think when he said car, I'd always remembered about his death, and I'd always thought about the kid that like hit him in his car, and I thought, I just remember that kid had like a shitty attitude about it.
Yeah.
And it seemed really, it's so weird to me when people do things and they're not repentant. You know what I mean? Like he essentially was killed by a guy who was driving poorly or recklessly or something.
Yeah, it was fucked up.
And the kid's like comments were like, so what are you gonna do? Like, I mean, it was like it was really weird. Do you remember any of that?
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, it was terrible because Sam was, you know, literally getting his life together. He just got married and he was going out to do a gig and it was just wrong place at the wrong time. And some guy was fucking drinking and he just, you know, he went into his lane and it was a wrap, you know.
He was driving to Vegas, right?
I think it was Needles.
Oh, Needles.
Yeah.
And he'd gotten sober, gotten his life together, married?
Yeah, he just got married to Malika, and it was Carl LeBeau and Bill Kennison were following him.
Wow.
In the car. And Malika, and the guy came into, it was a two-lane highway, and the guy came into Sam's lane, and they hit him head-on because he was drinking. This guy and Sam got tossed, I guess, from the car or whatever, and he plopped out on the cement, and there, you know, there was, that's kind of how it happened. And then Malika just had a couple scrapes.
So,
like, yeah, it was really sad, you know, because for me, it was like, I had a lot of tragedy early on, you know, right when I started making it. Like, I was doing, you know, MTV and then, or Encino Man, and then Sam died. And then a little bit, and then I think I did In the Army Now, and then I had the porno star girlfriend shoot herself and she died.
Who was she?
That was Savannah.
Oh, Savannah.
You remember
that? Yeah, kinda? I do. Yes, I do remember her.
And she was
blonde,
she was, you know, not my girlfriend at the time, but it was like, it was just, you know, it was heavy. I'm a very emotional person. You know what I mean? I get taken advantage of a lot because I'm so nice.
Well, I want to drill down on getting taken advantage of for a second. We need, and Chris, look up that story of the guy who hit Kennison because I remember he was
he didn't care.
It was all his fault, and his answers were sort of like, what do you want from me? And it's like, you killed Sam Kennison, buddy. And then the guy's like, so? Like, it just seemed very bizarre.
Yeah, 17-year-old drunk driver.
Right.
Truck. He pled guilty to one count of vehicular manslaughter with gross negligence, sentenced to 1 year probation, 300 hours of community service, and his license was suspended for 2 years.
Did he have, is there any part you can find where he made like a comment about it?
Because
that's the part I remember. All right, let's take a quick break and we'll come back and we'll find out why Polly's so easy to take advantage of right after this.
Hey, this is Stephanie Wilder Taylor.
And Lynette Carolla.
And we're For Crying Out Loud. Listen to our show because there's lots of swearing.
Mm-hmm, lots of stories.
Lots of personal information.
That you don't really need to know, but we tell you anyway.
Yeah.
So check us out on iTunes and Podcast One.
For Crying Out Loud with Lynette Carolla and Stephanie Wilder Taylor. Every Tuesday and Friday at Carolla Digital, Podcast One, and Apple Podcasts. It's